It's pretty obvious that we don't have 50 members who can agree on a replacement. What we do have is a vote that many of us made 2 years ago at a time when the President of the United States would not sign the legislation that would repeal Obamacare and, with a two-year delay, give us an opportunity to build something better. That's what I sense most of our members would like to vote on now, and we'll be doing that in the near future.
Daimler announcing a voluntary recall for 3 million diesel vehicles in Europe. Once again, Daimler announces a voluntary recall. 3 million diesels in Europe will be recalled. It's investing 220 million euros to upgrade the diesel cars.
NASDAQ holding at record high, or I should say making a record high. The S&P 500 now looks like it has closed at a record high, up by almost 2 points. But again, that is good enough for a new high. Stocks remain fairly buoyant, and of course helping to lead that buoyancy, big cap tech names.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's July 19th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. So happy you're here with us for our Wednesday edition. We've got a great program for you today. A little bit later on in the show, we'll bring in a couple of storm chasers from Illinois Storm Chasers. We'll talk about the chances for severe weather again this week and maybe more flooding. And really the business of storm chasing. We'll talk to them, get their firsthand impressions of it, and see how they do their jobs every day. A little bit later on, too, we will have the latest from agriculture and commodities. Orion Samuelson will be here with us. And in a minute, we'll talk about the business of marijuana. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures, so NASDAQ and S&P futures, really all of them, are flat to positive this morning. Dow futures up down now just about 5 points. NASDAQ futures up about 17 and a half. Shares are mostly higher in Asia today after a mixed finish on Wall Street yesterday. Investors are turning their focus to policy meetings by central bank boards in Japan and the EU. Japan's Nikkei stock index edged just about a half a percent higher. Hong Kong was up just a little bit as well. Shanghai added about 1.5%. South Korea was up just 0.2%. Shares in Southeast Asia are mixed. European Central Bank head Mario Draghi expected to tread softly on Thursday as the European Union's 19-country euro currency union monetary authority inches toward scaling back its monetary stimulus in the form of 60 billion euros. That's about $69 billion in monthly bond purchases. Japan's central bank likewise not expected to take any drastic moves given recent subdued data on inflation and consumer sentiment. In Europe this morning, most of the indices are higher. The FTSE, DAX, and CAC all up just about 0.2%. Back in this country, gold and silver are higher. Crude oil is trading up just about a third at $46.56 a barrel. Couple of stories we're watching for you. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in the Senate says the body will vote next week on trying to move ahead on a straight-up repeal of Obamacare, the American Care Act, the Affordable Care Act, I should say. McConnell made the announcement last night. He says the vote was at the request of President Trump and Vice President Mike Pence, but three Republican senators, Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and Shelley Morcapito of West Virginia, have turned on McConnell's repeal of Obamacare. It is questionable whether or not that will even make it to the floor for a vote because of their opposition. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says he'll continue to defend the supply management system that protects the Canadian dairy industry in talks about revamping the North American Free Trade Agreement. A U.S. House subcommittee raised the longstanding trade irritant at its hearing on NAFTA negotiations yesterday, suggesting Canadian measures to protect the industry will be a sticking point. Congressman Ron Kind from Wisconsin, a Democrat, says he doesn't want to jeopardize a crucial trading relationship with Canada, but thinks the system should be a little bit more balanced. The business of marijuana, believe it or not, it is one that is out there and about there because in several states, recreational marijuana is now allowed. Nevada is one of them. Colorado is another. We thought we'd bring in an analyst from the Marijuana Business Daily, Eli McVeigh, who's with us this morning via Skype. Eli, first of all, welcome to the opening bell. Did you ever think we'd be having a conversation about the business of marijuana?
It really is. It's a mainstream industry in the truest sense of the word. It's come a long time. It's come a long way in the past 10 years. Certainly consumers' attitudes, public perception has changed rapidly. We saw legalization initiatives kind of sweep the country last year. So it is legitimate. It is here. And yes, it has come a long way in the past 10 years.
What would you say is the economic impact, or where it is now and what it's projected to be perhaps?
Economic impact, so kind of the more than just the sales of marijuana, it's, you know, the paychecks that are going to workers that, you know, work at marijuana businesses, tax revenue. Right now we're looking at about $22 billion in 2017, but you forecast that out to 2021 when we'll have many more new markets come online, and we could see that rise almost as high as $70 billion.
And it's not just the revenue from those jobs and the economic output. It's also revenue from taxes, isn't it? I mean, a lot of states that are allowing this to move forward, they're starting to put taxes on there.
Right. It is. It's actually taxed pretty heavily. So in addition to the sales taxes that you would pay just like on any other item, you're going to pay excise taxes. So you can think of it almost like the additional taxes that they place on cigarettes. And you know, state governments, local governments have realized significant revenue from those taxes.
One of the interesting articles, or one of the interesting statistics I saw recently, is now more people work in marijuana-related fields than are bakers or cleaners in the U.S.
Yeah, I think that stat is bakers and dental hygienists is what we put up there. It just really kind of puts that into perspective how big this industry has become. The nature of the jobs are really, there's full-time workers, certainly. There's high-skilled workers needed to produce extracts or to run a cultivation facility, but there's a lot of part-time jobs in the retail sector of the industry. And businesses in this industry they're really state-by-state. They're small businesses. So a lot of these jobs are at local businesses, oftentimes family-run, maybe a mom-and-pop recreational store there in town.
So, Eli, who's doing it right and who's not doing it so well? Is there a model for the nation that people look to and how this is progressing?
In terms of the regulatory nature, I think a lot of people agree that Colorado has done quite well striking a balance between regulations that are not preventing businesses to grow, but also protecting customers and realizing tax revenue. New York might be an example where the state government was a little behind on the regulatory regime. Prices of marijuana were very high. Just a limited number of companies were allowed to compete in that market. There's no smokable forms of marijuana, so it really wasn't very consumer friendly. So Nevada is actually another example that just recently began rec sales. A lot of people believe that government system, which has moved very quickly to get recreational marijuana off the ground, they're doing a lot of really good things over there as well, too.
Yeah, and if you bring up Nevada, we saw recently the state there seems to be running out of marijuana to the extent that the governor's created a state of emergency.
Yeah, that was really interesting. A lot of businesses believed that they had the product in stock. They were ready to meet demand. But boy, starting July 1st, right there at midnight, people just packed into stores, and the demand just significantly outpaced what people expected out there.
That's and there were lines too. One of the things that kind of jumped off the screen at me was people waiting in line at midnight to be there first.
Yeah, it's the level of enthusiasm there in Nevada was remarkable, and I think we're going to see that sustained for a long period of time. It's kind of a revolving door of tourists in that market, so you're not selling to the same customers over and over again. So that's going to be a really exciting one to watch.
Eli, hang on with us. We're going to continue with Eli McVeigh. He is a business-to-business analyst at Marijuana Business Daily, and we're going to talk a little bit about this model of recreational marijuana and see if it's one that can be duplicated in other states like Illinois as the opening bell continues.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, investors left the markets mixed on Tuesday. The Dow Jones Jones Industrial Average lost 55 points to close at 21,574, but the NASDAQ gained nearly 30 points to set a new high water mark, 6,344. The S&P 500 picked up about 1.5 points, enough to set its own record. Retailers are aggressively competing for the estimated $27 billion that parents will spend on back-to-school shopping. Watch for early promotions and digital experiences that make store visits more attractive, such as order tracking or online purchase in-store pickup. Frontier Airlines plans a major expansion, adding 21 new destinations and 85 new routes to its network. The biggest scheduling surge comes in Denver, the carrier's hometown and largest hub. Slide over Blue Apron and HelloFresh. Amazon is slipping into the kitchen with its own ready-to-prepare meal packages as it moves ahead with its purchase of Whole Foods. The Amazon-branded meal kits are being rolled out in only a few markets to start. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program, 524. Glad you're here with us. We're talking about the business of marijuana. A couple of states have already gone recreational. Big examples that we've focused on so far, Nevada and Colorado. Eli McVeigh is with us. He is with the Marijuana Business Daily via Skype with us this morning. Eli, as our conversation continues here, I'm kind of curious what kind of challenges there'll be moving forward for other states from not only a regulatory, but from perhaps an economic and even a social perspective in all of this.
There's a lot from the regulatory perspective. There's a lot of emphasis now being placed on how do you set up your testing criteria. So when you produce marijuana, you send it off to a testing lab and they test it for contaminants. And people are still working to try and find that right balance between customer safety, so they don't have pesticides or heavy metals in their marijuana, and business friendly regulations, so they're not overburdened by that by those testing requirements. Socially, I think a lot of people have come around to the idea that marijuana, even though maybe you might not support it recreationally, is not as harmful as it once may seem. So this is largely a societal issue. There has been a lot made of the fact that when you decriminalize marijuana, you keep the jail population more under control. You're not putting people away for life for a really minor offense. And then in terms of some of the challenges for other governments moving forward, we've seen most of the states that can put recreational marijuana on a ballot do so and have citizens vote on it. So a lot of new legalization initiatives are going to have to come from state legislatures. And we've seen that they're just a little behind the times in terms of public opinion. So it's going to be more of a struggle moving forward to get new markets online, as citizens can't just go to the ballot box and vote for marijuana. It's going to have to come from their legislature.
And when you bring up legislatures, I talked to one state lawmaker here in Illinois who looks at the example from Colorado and Nevada and sees those taxes and dollar signs, and that sort of weighs more heavily on him than it did just watching it as an experiment.
Yeah, like I said, the revenue is significant. I think there's an estimate out there right now from the Marijuana Policy Project if Illinois legalized recreational marijuana, they could realize between $350 and $700 million in annual tax revenue. That might take several years to materialize, and there are substantial costs to implementing a recreational marijuana program. But the dollars are real, and certainly in the case of Illinois, I think a new revenue stream would be welcome.
Absolutely, with the budget problems we're still having and have had over the last few years. Let me ask you again about Nevada, because in that scenario I mentioned earlier, there were some concerns that there wasn't enough marijuana available for medical marijuana. Are these competing interests?
In Nevada's case was a little unique in that the rec sales began early, so they were using the existing supplies of medical marijuana to supply the recreational market. In most cases, in most states, we see that those two markets are very separate. So when you put a plant in the ground in Colorado, you'll know that it's either made for the recreational market or the medical market, and cultivators can adjust the supply as needed. Like I said, in Nevada, it was just a really unique case in that early rec sales began from the existing medical marijuana supply. So when the two, you know, when a state that has medical marijuana adds recreational marijuana, a lot of times we'll see patient counts dip, but they will go back to some sort of sustainable level. And oftentimes the two exist side by side.
I was surprised to see, and you mentioned this earlier, the technical aspect of some of these jobs. They're really scientific in some ways. Walk us through that again. Tell us about that.
Well, so the level of technicality is really going to depend on what the job is. For a lot of cultivators, we see experience in traditional agriculture. We're seeing a lot of new greenhouses, new grow facilities. They're really just taking existing agriculture techniques and applying them to the marijuana industry. So someone with expertise in that field, that is going to translate very well into marijuana. In terms of running a grow operation, a lot of times people are looking for someone that understands standard operating procedures. Can we get this plant, can we harvest this plant on time and make it profitable? And that takes somebody somebody that kind of understands the logistics of running a business. For some of the infused product manufacturers, you know, that turn marijuana into extracts to put it into oils or edibles or what have you. That's another job that takes a high degree of technical skill. So there really are jobs in this industry that demand a high level of expertise and knowledge.
Sometimes you hear people say this is sort of like alcohol. It's sort of like the whole process of legalizing alcohol prohibition. Can the two industries be compared? Are they? Is that an adequate comparison?
They can certainly be compared. I mean, alcohol kind of has its, you know, it's been around for, you know, since kind of the beginning of our country, and it's really established a place in our culture. Marijuana is still at the very early stages of that. We're getting there. They can exist side by side, certainly. I think it's a fair comparison to compare the two. They're both inebriants. They both are used recreationally, although and with marijuana we see a lot of medical use. But alcohol companies are looking at the marijuana industry as a threat. We saw, you know, in some of the campaign finance disclosures for the states that legalized recreational marijuana in the 2016 election, we saw that alcohol companies were some of the largest contributors to efforts to keep recreational marijuana from passing. So they certainly can exist side by side. There's a lot of concerns about their use, using marijuana and using alcohol at the same time. But the alcohol companies are definitely eyeing the space and seeing how this is affecting alcohol consumption moving forward.
You know, it's surprising, just as we're having this conversation, it struck me that in addition to all the other industries we've talked about, we've created a news delivery industry as well. The Marijuana Business Daily has come up, and here you are covering all of this stuff.
Yeah, it really, you know, as the marijuana industry evolves, it spawns all sorts of ancillary businesses. So there's, you know, just like us, Marijuana Business Daily, we cover the business aspect of the marijuana industry, which is kind of a niche that wasn't being filled, and we have done so successfully. But there's also all types of ancillary businesses that marijuana companies need. So accountants that are well versed in the intricacies of the laws around marijuana, you know, marketing agencies, what have you, lawyers for sure. Those are definitely in need in this industry.
Well, Eli, we look forward to seeing what the future brings in this, and hopefully we can stay in touch with you.
Awesome. Great. Thanks for having me.
Eli McVeigh is a business-to-business analyst at Marijuana Business Daily. You can find them online at mjbizdaily.com. Follow them on Twitter at mjbizdaily.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:41. Glad you're here with us for our Wednesday edition of the show. Some more bad weather is on the way to the Chicago area this week, just when we thought it was over and didn't need any more, especially the northern suburbs. The business of weather in focus now on The Opening Bell. We're happy to have with us Illinois Storm Chasers. Adam Lucio and Danny Neal are with the company. They roam all over the place, based here in the Chicago area, looking for severe weather and keeping us all up to date on it. Adam, Danny, welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
It's good to have you here with us. First, let's get out of the way what you guys are watching for the weather that might be coming, I guess, tonight into tomorrow. Are we going to see more bad weather?
It looks like we do have an increasing threat for thunderstorms, especially beginning tomorrow morning. We're expecting some rather intense complexes to develop up in the Minnesota area, and then they're going to work their way towards northern Illinois sometime tomorrow morning. And then after that, we could see repeated development from about Thursday afternoon through at least Saturday afternoon.
You guys have Twitter and your website and Facebook and use all kinds of other platforms as well. Talk to me, Danny, about what you guys get ready for here as you see bad weather approaching. How far out in advance do you guys get ready, and what are you doing right now to prepare?
We're looking about 3 to 5 days in advance, using various weather models through various resources. We try not to hype the weather too much. The weather is always ever-changing, so from one model run to the next, it's a different solution. So once we clue in right around 3 days that severe weather is looking likely or heavy rain is looking likely, we start mentioning that to all our followers via our platforms. We think early warning is the best type of warning to get. We'd rather you prepare 2 or 3 days in advance than getting the notice shown on you or thrown on you, you know, when a warning is issued 20 minutes in advance. We prepare ourselves just by getting the most accurate and the best information out there and just continuously hitting the people in the path with that information so they have every bit of information to prepare.
Adam, how important do you see that your roles are in making sure all of us know what's happening out there? I mean, many times you guys are the first on the scene, the first in these areas of weather to even alert the National Weather Service.
Yeah, we're an important piece. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Adam. I think we do provide somewhat of an important role. We work very closely with the National Weather Service, and they recognize us as WRN Ambassadors, which stands for Weather Ready Nation, which means they officially recognize us as a partner that works with them. Because they're sitting behind the desk, they're looking at the radar, and they do a great job issuing the warnings, but they need that ground truth information either from us or from other spotters. And our Facebook page and our social media platforms come in very handy because Danny and I can't be everywhere at the same time. I could be experiencing hail down in, say, Tinley Park, and somebody up there in Elgin is getting 5 inches of rain, so they can relay that information to us. We can pass that along quickly to the National Weather Service, and that way they really have a good handle of what's going on where to issue better and more timely warnings.
And a lot of this is technological in addition to having the human eyes, but talk to me about the technology part of this. And Danny, I understand you guys are launching a new part of your service.
Sure. We actually started our social media service about 6 years ago. We figured that everybody nowadays has a smartphone, or at least most everybody. Everybody's always on Facebook or Twitter or connecting that way. So why not be able to get weather information and stuff that's actually going to help keep you, your family, your friends safe? A simple share can get that information out to, you know, thousands, even millions of people. So we've always tried to been really in depth with our social media. Al Sutherland from Intelligent actually approached us with his new idea with the platform for the service that we just joined. We're actually looking forward to using it because certain social media has its limitations with its reach. But this new platform here, we're going to be able to blast out our updates to all of our people who subscribe to us and not have any limitations whatsoever on what we can get out to people. Like I said, one share could be a life saved. Now I don't have to worry about who's going to see it. I know if everyone subscribes to Intelligent LLC, their application, we're going to be fine. I mean, we're going to get that information out to everybody.
And the key part of that is it's pushing to mobile devices, right? So to a mobile phone or a smartphone.
Correct.
Anybody that gets Amber Alerts or other things in the weather alerts, you know, sometimes you can be in a meeting or away from the Facebook or Twitter, and those alerts, you're right, can save lives by seconds. And how important is that?
Oh, it's very important. Whether it's a tornado warning, which for obvious reasons you'd want to get that warning, something as small as a flood advisory, we can push out to people. It doesn't matter if it's one person or a million person. That one person is going to want to get that information. Driving down a flooded road at night or into floodwaters at night is one of the biggest hazards out there. A lot of people have no access to get the warnings. They're, like Adam said, the National Weather Service does a fantastic job. They're on top of their game with issuing the warnings. It's now the civilians' chance to actually have a way to receive those warnings. The information is out there. It's just a matter of, do they know how to get it? And we want to make that bridge or bridge that gap a little bit easier.
Adam, would you call what you guys do now, is this an industry? Is storm chasing now an industry? Is it something that you guys make money doing and make a living doing, or is it still a hobby?
It's a little bit of both. There are ways to earn revenue through storm chasing, though it's not as much as some people, myself included, would hope for. But we're always thinking of new ways to sort of self-fund and sort of invest in this lifestyle. Danny and I both work day jobs right now, but we're always looking for that way to help make it a living. It's definitely difficult.
Yeah, and sometimes you hear that, especially out in the big tornado alley areas, Oklahoma and some of those other places, you've got all of these different storm chasers all over the place. Are there too many storm chasers or no?
In my opinion, yes, there are. Traffic issues are becoming an increasing problem out there, but at the same time, everybody has a right to be there. So it's kind of hard for me to say, no, you can't be there, only I can be there. But it's definitely a growing problem. Storm chasing has become easier with the advances in technology. Some people, they can just light up their phones and track storm chasers now and follow them around with having no weather knowledge whatsoever. And that's leading to some problems out there, yes.
Yeah. So tell us, guys, Danny or Adam, how do we follow you and how can we subscribe to your service?
Danny, go ahead.
You can simply go on Facebook and search Illinois Storm Chasers. You'll see our logo pop up. Give us a like, give us a follow there. On Twitter, it's @Illinois_storms. And then our actual website is IllinoisStormChasers.com that we update nearly daily with something we call the threat assessment model. It's a graphic that we update in 7 categories of weather that will paint the entire state of Illinois. And then for whatever hazard we feel that day is going to strike that affected state, we will put a graphic out and send it out to basically anybody who's willing to receive it.
Well, gentlemen, best of luck to you. Stay safe out there, and thanks for helping us to watch the skies and stay safe from storms.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Danny Neal and Adam Lucio from Illinois Storm Chasers. Again, you can follow them online at IllinoisStormChasers.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, a mixed situation this morning with futures. Dow, S&P, NASDAQ futures flat to negative this morning. Now the latest on commodities and agriculture. And good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. The trade yesterday was a two-way trade in the grain wheat market at the Chicago Board of Trade. Corn futures higher yesterday, lifted by concerns again that hot and dry weather could reduce yields during pollinating time for the corn crop. Meanwhile, September corn ended the day 2 cents higher at $3.77 a bushel. Soybeans also were higher. Wheat edged lower as investors sold winter wheat and bought Minneapolis Grain Exchange spring wheat. So at the end of the session yesterday, the nearby August soybean contract up 4¾ cents a bushel, and September corn up 2 cents. Moving on to livestock trade, it was a mixed market yesterday. Cattle futures giving up gains. technical pressure on the live cattle market. Some funds selling August futures, simultaneously buying the October contract, and then, of course, getting in position for the monthly cattle on feed report due out on Friday. At the end of the day yesterday, the nearby August cattle contract down $1.72 a hundredweight, August feeder cattle down $3.12 a hundredweight, and the August lean hog contract ended down 30 cents a hundredweight. We're looking ahead to expectations for the cattle on feed report for the month due out on Friday. From Allendale, we get this projection. They're looking for a 3% increase in the number of cattle on feed. They're looking for a 6% increase in the number of cattle placed on feed and a 4% increase on the number of cattle marketed in June. And you have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. And now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Wednesday, July 19th. Just one major economic report on the schedule this morning. The Commerce Department releases housing starts for June. After the market closes, American Express reports its quarterly financial results. A new report finds the supply of natural gas resources in the U.S. is growing. The biennial potential supply of natural gas report is due out today from the Potential Gas Committee. The House Budget Committee marks up the FY 2018 budget today, and Citizens Against Government Waste will release its 2017 Congressional Pig Book. The book is a database of pork projects and a summary of the most egregious examples of appropriations bill. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, July 19th.